Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the wind condition.
Telepath, illusionist, maze guy.
So we got to cast Living Death, and we have now won the game. We will move on.
You open a random pack of cards, expecting to get what you want. And if you do, you're on cloud nine. If not, you want to buy more.
Oh my god, did I play Magic this weekend?
Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean, I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing okay today.
Oh, that's just swell. That's fantastic. That's boss.
It is. I mean, I've been up since 5 a.m., but hey, whatever.
Dude, that's awesome. I think I only woke up twice last night with my babies crying and screaming. So, not too bad.
That's pretty good for once.
Yeah. Before we really kick things off, just want to remind everybody this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where you can head over there, make an order, any order of $10 or more, whether it's singles or sealed product or deck sleeves or deck boxes. If you use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps, it'll save you 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. And Greg, we are going to be doing another giveaway coming up here in episode 50.
I know, right? Isn't that weird? I mean, what is that? That's 9 episodes away?
It is. I mean, this is episode 41. I mean, we're coming up on this pretty quickly. So, you know, be ready. Be ready for a sweet, sweet giveaway coming up here. And then also, before we really dive into it, Greg, did you play any Magic this last week?
Oh my god, did I play Magic this weekend.
Why don't you tell us about your Magic you played this last week? I think it was something happened on the weekend.
Yeah, this past weekend was the pre-release for Rise of Ixalan. It's pretty good. Well, so I played in two events. I did the midnight release at my local store, pre-release. And I can't remember that deck too well. It was okay. It was Dinosaurs. I got a Zatalpa in it. That card is busted, by the way.
Yeah. Windmill Slam as soon as you get the mana to play that thing.
Yeah. I had a Registrar Alpha. There's a couple cool cards.
Wow.
But the two-headed giant is where everything was.
Okay, here we go.
So we went 3-1, and the only reason why we lost one game was because the Lightning Rig pirate that untaps whenever you put a pirate into play.
Sure.
If we had a blue mana like a turn earlier, we would have been able to take control of that, and Andrew would have swung in with like 7/3/3 merfolk because of Kumena.
Ooh. I hear Kumena's a good card.
He's kind of good. He's kind of good. So the things that we opened, we had a Kumena, a Tashana, the Whirlpool Raider Oracle.
Wow.
Seafloor Oracle. Sorry. That's the one where every time a Merfolk deals damage to a player, draw a card.
Yep.
So that was all in Andrew's deck. Then in my deck, I had Wayward Swordtooth, which is the 5/5 for 3 that allows you to play an extra land. And when you hit the Ascend, he can attack and block.
Yep.
Then we had a pair of Golden Guardians, which are the 4/4s that fight a creature you control, and when it dies, transform it and turns into the Golem Foundry.
Oh my gosh.
And it taps for 2 mana of any one color, and you can pay 4 and put out golems, 4/4 golems.
Yeah.
So there was 2 of those. Then there was a Verdant Sun's Avatar, the 5/5 for 7 that gains you life.
Oh, gain all that life.
Then there were 2, yes, that is correct, 2 Zatalpas, a Registrar Alpha, and a Zakama, Primal Calamity.
So wait, you got a Zatalpa in your single event as well as in this two-headed giant? What?
Yeah, I did. And I think
the word for that
day,
is stupid.
The play of the day was the Cherished Hatchling, which is like that 2-drop, 2/1 that when it dies, it gives dinosaurs, you control Flash, and whenever a dinosaur enters the battlefield, they fight another creature.
Mm-hmm.
So I swung into with the Cherished Hatchling, because it's like, I want this guy to die. It seems like fun. So they blocked instead of taking the two. I mean, they weren't at a low health, so they didn't have to block.
Right.
They were thinking, oh, I'll kill a dude. Sure, sounds good. Mm-hmm. And I go, Zakama. Eat up their dude. Oh, there was one other card I forgot to mention. I had a ramp, Silverclad Ferocidons.
Okay.
The 7-drop Enrage, when it gets dealt damage, it makes each opponent sacrifice a permanent.
Oh, that's just wonderful.
So not only did I get to eat something of theirs with Zakama and then on top, I played that right after it, need another thing, and then make them sacrifice permanent. It was busted.
So how'd you guys end up doing?
3-1.
Okay.
Because we lost one round by literally a round because we didn't get a blue source. So going into the final round, we were 2-1.
Uh-huh.
And the only person that we could play, because it was a small turnout, were the 3-0s. So we had to play the undefeated team, mm-hmm. and we crushed them.
Jeez.
So obviously I felt like our decks were more busted than we gave them credit. We just didn't get to play them as much.
Sometimes if you just don't draw the right mana, you know, you can't cast the right spells, and things just don't end up working. So, wow. That sounds like a ton of fun, man. I wish I could have gotten out there for a pre-release event. Unfortunately, this time I couldn't, but, you know, maybe next time.
You have to make Dominaria.
Oh, my gosh. That's going to be, like, a priority for me. Once we hit Dominaria... I'll definitely have to get out there because I love pre-releases. They're so much fun.
And you know, maybe, just maybe, I took that week off. And just maybe it's my birthday week and we might be able to meet up.
Oh my gosh. If there's a two-headed giant pre-release event for Dominaria, Greg.
I don't know. What does Crazy Squirrel do?
If we don't go undefeated in that, then I think we don't deserve to play Magic anymore. But no.
Oh, man. It depends on what you open.
That is true. You know, I hear to be good at sealed, you got to open good cards.
Yeah.
I just heard it. That's all I heard.
Do.
Yeah. Well, cool. That's awesome. I'm so glad that you had a very fun, you know, pre-release experience. Yeah. And
it was pretty good.
Yeah, of course, it releases this weekend. So, you know, everybody.
What do you mean? It's today.
It is today. We're recording on a Friday, and it is the release day for Rivals of Ixalan. So,
you know, I went out and bought stuff today.
Oh, you did? What'd you buy? Make me jealous.
I got some Brass's Bounties.
Ooh.
Because I like that card. I'm on it. Etali, the Primal Storm.
Were any of those Brass's Bounties buy a box promos?
No, those are Draft Weekend promos.
Oh, they're Draft Weekend promos. Oh, okay. All right.
So go out and draft this weekend. Get your Brass's Bounty.
Get your Brass's Bounty right here. All right, continue. What else did you get?
So Etali, the Primal Storm.
Okay.
Red dinosaurs are good. The card is actually really busted.
Sounds like a good EDH commander.
Tianali Skirmisher.
Okay.
That's the Ascend that you pay X. You get X1 ones. But if you have the City's Blessing, you get to keep all
Isn't
your
that Tianali Summoner?
What did I say?
Skirmisher?
Yeah, it's Summoner. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that Ascend Hyperdrive mode. Yeah.
It feels real good. I figured that would look really strong in my Elemental deck.
Yeah, I really like that card.
And then an Azor's Gateway.
Oh, yes.
Because I'm kind of hyped by this card. I cannot wait to play it in my Selvala deck.
It's the new Jace's Vryn's Prodigy, right?
I mean, right? kind of.
I think it's really cool. I think that it actually, you know, I don't know. Someone's going to try to use it, and once they flip it, everyone's going to want to do it. So I think it's going to be a really popular card.
Yep, I agree. All right. Yep. So anyhow.
Yep.
Those are pretty much the cards I got. A couple other neat things. I opened some packs. I got an Azor. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, that's about it.
You know what? Speaking of cards, real quick, before we dive into this, this sounds like a pretty good segue for me. You know how a lot of people are talking about they want to build vampires or they want to build merfolk, that it's going to be a pretty strong tribe moving forward. I would hearken back to something I might have said earlier. I think that this is a great opportunity to invest in your playset of either Sweltering Suns or even Hour of Devastations, because I think that a lot of people are going to be trying a new go wide strategy, either with, you know, what's left of Ramunap Red or Vampires or Merfolk. And I think even main decking some of these damaging board sweepers in red might be a pretty good idea. And they're really cheap right now, both Hour of Devastation and Sweltering Suns. So if you don't have them, go out and get them, because Hazoret dies to Hour of Devastation, if you didn't know.
Sure does. So that's true.
And, you know, you might even be able to take down a Zatalpa if you damage it first and then cast Hour of Devastation.
Yeah, so, but I don't think Zatalpa is going to get played. Itali is just so much better.
I think you are correct, sir. I think you're very correct in that
statement. I actually got to cast and swing with an Itali, and I got a Solemn, a Swords, and something else. It was good.
Oh, wow. Oh, Commander, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Oh boy. All right. Well, let's move on then to more of the meat and potatoes of this episode. Let's take a turn and head over to Lore Corner.
Everything about the story?
Everything about the story.
Okay. Good.
Because it's so good.
Where did we leave off?
Well,
Jason Vraska, right?
Yeah, we left off with Jason Vraska, and they were ascending the staircase to this golden temple that they saw. And Jace was very, you know, kind of weary. He was kind of weak, and so he was kind of forced. It's a forced march up the stairs. But in this story, entitled Glimpse the Far Side of the Sun, we actually start with Whatley, and not a current Whatley, a Whatley who is only 8 years old.
Aw, just a little kid.
Just a little kid. So we join Whatley with some of her compatriots being taught by a priest. And Whatley asks the question as they're training, because it's a lot of physical fighting, a lot of training. She asks the priest the question, what's on the far side of the sun? And the priest is like,
no. That's not something you should be asking.
Yeah, that's irrelevant. Like, asking questions that we really don't know or have an answer to is completely irrelevant. Don't worry about that. Just worry about fighting and, you know, talking about us and our story and our victories. So she's a little taken aback by this. She's like, you know, I kind of want to know. Like, this is, and she kind of presses, you know, a little bit more. And the priest is kind of just like, you know, forget it. Let's go. Everybody up. Let's go fight. And so all the kids jump up and get ready to fight because, you know, that's what they're used to. That's what they're supposed to do. And Whatley kind of sits there for a while and thinks. She's like, I wonder, you know, about this whole other side of the sun thing. And so, yeah, she eventually, you know, gets up and does her thing. Oh, she asks the priest says, your job is to tell the stories, tell the truths of our history, you know, and preserve our past. And then she goes, he says, your word will be taken as truth. And Whatley goes, so I make stuff up? Yeah. And he goes, no, you just say what we tell you to say, essentially.
Yep. Yeah,
so anyway, so Whatley gets up and, you know, goes over and grabs her sword with everybody else. And then we flicker back over to a current day Whatley who is still running through the forest with Angrath.
And as they're running through it, they're kind of talking, and Whatley's talking about how she's there as the warrior poet, why she's going there, and about what she's doing there. And she's telling Angrath, I was told to come find this city because I am the warrior poet. I am the almighty. I am going to be the one that answers everything for my the Sun Empire. But Angrath's like, you think like an ant.
He's like, and why?
She's like, do you insult me? And they're like, no, you're just an ant, and your Sun Empire is an anthill, and everybody else here is an anthill. And she takes offense to this because, I mean, calling a great empire an anthill seems rude and just wrong. And she starts talking, and Angrath kind of disregards it, honestly. And then they come across some ruins. And Whatley, of course, kind of recognizes it. as the Temple of Alkazatz. And
yes.
Something about the Sacred Rose. And as they're going, she's like, I've got to investigate. I got to learn knowledge, because she's a very inquisitive girl. So as she's going into this temple, out comes a vampire. And she, of course, accuses this vampire of being an invader. And
well, Angrath pipes up and goes, you're Alenda. And Whatley goes, he knows more about something of legend than I do? What the heck?
Exactly, yes. And ultimately, Alenda goes, they're not supposed to be conquistadors. They're supposed to be humble. This is in no way what I left them to do. I must teach them a lesson. And she walks. She shadow walks away from there.
Yep, yep.
I mean, she literally just, everything darkens. She vanishes. And that's it. Mm-hmm. So, it's like, what? This is cool. And then they continue on in.
Yep.
And I think that's really about it with Angrath and Whatley.
Well, he tells her to follow him.
That's right, because she's been wasting so much of his time and just disputing the fact that she is an ant. And he's like, I have something to show you, essentially. And he opens a portal to his home plane of Kaldheim. If you don't know what that plane is, maybe if you played Duels of the Planeswalkers back in like 2014, Ramaz, a cryptomancer, cryomancer, went there and
what?
Essentially, yeah, you don't know this, do you?
I remember playing that Duels of the Planeswalkers, but this, wow, way to connect the dots.
He was a teamer planeswalker, and a lot of people are speculating right now, does Angrath know him? I'm like, nah, this has got to be a big plane. There's a hard chance that they each know each other, but maybe we're going to go to Kaldheim soon. What if Angrath lives? Anyhow, passing on, as they're moving in, one of the things that Whatley realizes is that this is not the city she saw in her vision.
No.
As they're pulled out of the portal, they both have the binding spell over their head that is now all too familiar. And of course, Whatley is caught off her guard. Angrath is not. So, after that, they continue into the city. And one of the things Whatley says to Angrath is, I wonder if the vampires are taking the immortal sun as it starts to get real dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Angrath mentions to her, you're about to find out.
Yeah.
And then we segue over to Jason Vraska.
Right. Well, one other thing I wanted to mention about their interaction was Whatley says something about, or Angrath keeps talking about freedom. You know, he goes, on my plane, you know, freedom is of the utmost importance. And Whatley actually asks him, you know, what would you do when you went back to your plane? You know, because she knows nothing of him. And he goes, I would visit my daughters. And Whatley's like kind of taken aback by his, you know, vulnerability there. But when he says that, because he actually has a heart, like, what the heck?
Yeah.
But he also says to her, yeah, when he says his home plane is Kaldheim, he says, do you understand what I mean now? And Whatley shook her head. And Angrath says, freedom starts with knowing when you're trapped.
Yeah.
So he has been trapped, I think he said, for 14 years on the plane of Ixalan.
14 years, yeah.
Yeah, and so Whatley is kind of, she's offended, but at the same time, she feels like she's more insignificant than she's ever kind of felt before, kind of starting to grasp and comprehend the fact that Ixalan is not the only, you know, plane of existence out there.
Ixalan is not a plane, it's only an island.
It's the continent, sure, okay, all right. So, you're right, they interact with Alenda and Angrath actually gets a little perturbed with Whatley, and so he kind of chains her or swipes at her with his chain. She kind of dodges a little bit, kind of sears her cheek, and then he dashes off. So they are now separated. And now we bounce back to Jace. And so Jace is still ascending the staircase with Vraska, And as they're climbing up the steps,
he's cataloging his thoughts.
He is. He's coming to terms with the fact that he can remember more now than ever before. And while he used to be this, you know, Jace that we knew of before Ixalan, kind of this moody, kind of, you know, emo, kind of, you know, nobody was really like hot on him, to the Jace on Ixalan, where everyone's like, oh snap, he's a pirate, you know, he gets after it, he gets involved physically in battle, like he's cool now. And so the fact that he sees all of this kind of coalescing together, and he's able to reach back into his past and see these visions of his mother, and what a warm, you know, comforting figure she was. And he remembers, you know, his adolescence, you know, on Vryn, you know, before he, you know, before he planeswalked away with his dueling with Alhamaret. And so he's just kind of still, you know, realizing all the stuff that's going on with him. And so he and Vraska, they hear something big coming. And so Jace quickly throws an illusion up to mask himself and Vraska, and a gigantic dinosaur represented by this picture of Zatalpa flies overhead. And Vraska... Wow. Oh, go ahead.
I think you missed something here, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you remember? He was trying to remember his memories. He was scoping around in there. And he remembers this golden dragon.
Oh my gosh, you're correct. Yeah, go.
But he couldn't name who it was. All he remembers is that it was a searing hot in his brain, and then he left. And he tries searching around in his memories, and he comes across another one, a white dragon.
But he remembers the name of that one.
Ugin.
Yes.
And there's something on this memory. Something he saw before, kind of fraying on the edges of the memory.
Yep.
And he kind of picks at it, and it shows that if anybody were to find this memory, it would protect itself, and he would instantly walk away.
Yes.
Which explains why outside knowledge Jace doesn't know about, Nicol Bolas, of course.
Right.
Why he planeswalked away instantly, and it said he would go to Ixalan. Which means Ixalan has some bearing with Ugin.
Yes, Ugin knows about Ixalan. Yep.
So.
Oh, that's so cool.
The plot thickens.
The plot definitely thickens. Okay, so. All
right, go ahead, back to Zatalpa.
Okay, so he, you know, kind of, he remembers this, and he kind of catalogs it as he keeps going. And so, yeah, so this dinosaur flies overhead, and, you know, then, you know, the illusion can kind of go. But Vraska looks at Jace and goes, dude, that was done. You did that way faster than I've ever seen you cast an illusion before.
Yeah.
And Jace is like, well, yeah, I know now that I was more powerful back before I planeswalked away from Vryn. And Vraska's like, you mean to tell me that you were more powerful when you were 13 than now? And he goes, yeah. And now that I know that, like, I'm just ridiculous. And Vraska looks at him and goes, Jace, you are incredible. And Jace is like, what? He wanted to hug her, but, you know, he knew that she didn't like to be hugged. So he kind of smiled, and he's like, oh, you're awesome. Thank you. So anyway, they have a moment there, and then they press on. And then they come to the top of the staircase, and they see Azor's gateway, or more this maze, this kind of cryptic puzzle here. And Vraska looks at Jace and goes, all right, you're the mind dude, you're the maze dude, go. And Jace even goes, that's me, he said with amusement. Jace Bellerin, Living Guild Pact, telepath, illusionist, maze guy. rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So he opens up the maze using his finger, and as soon as he finishes it, he notices something. These are the same type of runes that the Azorius use.
Yep, he sees himself in it, too, the Living Guild Pact.
And Vraska's like, the Azorius aren't here. That's Ravnica. And he's like, do we know of any famous planeswalkers that are Azorius? Well, there's Azor. He might have been a planeswalker. Was he a Sphinx? because he's feeling the mind on the other side of the store as a labyrinth. Mm-hmm. So very familiar. And at that moment, yeah, he realized it's definitely a sphinx on the other side.
And yeah, and Vraska's worried.
The door opens.
Yeah, well, she's worried that the fact that it's a sphinx and Jace's previous interaction with a sphinx, Alhamra, this might have a little bit of bearing on how he can handle the situation. Mm-hmm. But she tells him, you know, she's like, you will never be defeated by another sphinx again. And Jace kind of gets this confidence as they walk into the room. But yeah, right. Go ahead.
All right, so she prepares her petrifying glaze and tells him, just give me the word and I'll do it. So they walk in. He asks their name. And he doesn't say anything. They just say that they're strangers to the world. Mm-hmm. And that they want the Immortal Sun if you don't want to die. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Sphinx kind of laughs and tells them that he is Azor. And guess what, Gorgon? You're going to be a prisoner for the third time in your life. So Jace puts a psychic ward above both of them to protect themselves. And thinks about how he's a Hammeret and tells Azor, you're going to refer to her as Captain. And then he says, what does that make you? And Jace responds with, I'm Jace Bellerin, the living guild pact. As Azor flinches and says, the failsafe? No, the pirate.
So we see a Jace that is kind of starting to become a badass. I mean, he's confronting these situations, these problems, these characters, these sphinxes that he's already lost a lot to. Mm-hmm. And with confidence, you know.
Yeah.
He is a new Jace, and he's ready to battle and do what it takes to save his friend Vraska and, you know, continue with whatever his mission is. So that's the end of the story for this week. It's very exciting, and cannot wait to see what happens next week. You, Craig.
Interesting thing for you.
Yes.
The Talarian Community College mm-hmm. has started doing an evaluation on the story.
Oh.
And they evaluate it by the colors of magic. So if it's bad, it'll be one color, like white. If it's really good, it'll be Wooburn.
Okay.
And what they've pretty much surmised is that Ixalan as a whole has been exceedingly good.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. It has been.
The story team is doing a great job.
Oh, definitely. And I think that especially if you have played Magic previously, you know, to this set, and you're not brand new, and you know these characters as they develop through this particular block, it really kind of cuts a chord with you that, wow, these people, like, what you know of them can change.
Oh, yeah.
And they can evolve and become cooler people. And, you know, just because you think you know Jace, you might not know Jace, you know, a set or two later. So that's awesome. Yeah, no, I completely agree. Professor, you are 100% correct. And this story is outstanding. So awesome job for the R&D narrative team and the authors of the story. Greg, you had a little bit of speculation in terms of what is to come with the story. What do you think is going to happen?
We have all of our story cards. So we know the next two are Induced Amnesia, mm-hmm. which our art is Jace using what looks like an amnesia spell on Vraska,
yep.
and then Mastermind Acquisition. So my speculation, of course, is we're all wondering, why will they use amnesia? Why would Jace make Vraska forget anything?
Yeah.
And the one thing that I'm coming to now, we've speculated a lot on this because why not?
Yeah, right. That's what we
what
do.
What if Jace is unable to protect her from Azor and he uses this ability to make her forget about this fight?
Uh-huh.
And it's just as simple as that. I mean, maybe her mind gets fractured and it really messes her up.
Yeah. Or
so.
What if, and this is just me kind of spitballing here, what if he does this in response to Azor trying to dive into her brain to access information about something else, and Jace mm-hmm. realizes what's going on and goes, almost like, oh my gosh, what's that Phyrexian card, surgical extraction, like, yes, in response to something being like, nope, yoink, and just taking it out. And now Vraska is just like, getting her brain just fried. But, yeah, no, that's crazy. Yeah. It could be anything. We can't wait to see what happens in the next week's story. So, let's press on, Greg, to our next segment. We got a lot of news and announcements to cover, so why don't we head on into As Foretold.
It's a definitely an interesting week. We've, of course, got our banned and restricted listings for Magic this Monday. And everybody was expecting nothing to really happen in Standard, some unbannings in Modern, and EDH. I was expecting Prime Time to get unbanned.
Well, I think a lot of people were looking at Attune kind of in the crosshairs, thinking if there was a card that was going to get banned, one card, that Attune with Aether was probably the target. But they just kind of went...
They banned four cards.
Yep.
What were those
yep.
four cards?
Those four cards were Attune with Aether, Rogue Refiner, which essentially is nerfing, not killing, but nerfing energy decks.
Yes.
And then the second most powerful deck, Ramunap Red, had its legs pulled out from under it with the banning of Ramunap Ruins and Rampaging Ferocidon.
Yeah.
What a banning this was. This is four more cards that are banned in Standard, totaling, I want to say, 9 banned cards in the last 12-ish month period, which is absolutely nuts. So,
yeah.
I mean,
no, it's pretty insane. I mean, you've got these four, then you got Felidar Sovereign,
Felidar Guardian.
Guardian.
Yep.
You've got Smuggler's Copter, Aetherworks, Marvel. I think that's it.
I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah. So, that is.
But still, that's 7 cards banned in Standard in a set that it's not busted.
Right.
I think a lot of this can actually be to blame on the players.
Sure.
Because,
well, the ones doing,
in all honesty, the answers to these cards and decks are in Standard. They're there.
Yeah.
Just nobody's playing with them because they're not strong enough for them, or they just don't do it effectively. You know, does it have to be a one drop?
Yeah, in the article that Ian Duke wrote about for these bannings, he mentioned that Rampaging Ferocidon was expected to be an answer to the Saheeli Rai Felidar Guardian combo. Now, unfortunately, it was two sets or two blocks too late. And, I mean, do you think that if in Amonkhet they printed something that Rampaging Ferocidon, like obviously not a dinosaur, but something else, like, would that have saved the Saheeli Cat combo? I mean, I don't know, because when you get decks like Energy, when you get decks like 4-color Saheeli taking up 40%+ of the metagame, I mean, you were at GP Santa Clara. You said all the Standard decks there were Teemer Energy or 4-color Energy. It was gross. So, you know, this not only blows the lid off of the most dominant deck in Standard, but it cripples the second most dominant deck in Standard in Ramunap Red. I mean, you lose the Ramunap Ruins, the namesake of the deck. So I definitely see there still being a red deck in Standard that is very effective, but not hopefully to the level that Ramunap Red was dominant for so long before we actually saw the rise of Teemer Energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, there's still potential for decks like, you know, a Grixis Energy is still a possibility. I mean, you could run your Scarab God, you could run your Whirler Virtuoso, you could run your Glint Sleeve Siphoner, and you could run your Harness Lightning.
The problem is that all those decks kind of needed the green to make it work.
True.
For the mana fixing. So I think if we're going to see Energy deck, it's going to be 2-color Energy.
We two
won't
color
see
energy,
more
sure.
than two unless it's a splash, but even then it will be a challenge.
Right, I mean, you do have, though, you do have Aether Hub, and you do have Evolving Wilds. I mean, just saying. And you
and
have
Traveler's
all those dual
Amulet.
Lands and the fast lands. Right, right.
Yeah, there's. It's not that there isn't a way to do it. It's just it won't be good.
It won't be, yeah. It won't be as clean or as effective or as fast, I think, as the Teemer Energy or 4-color Energy decks. I think this banning was fantastic. I think they not only looked at the immediate problem of teamer energy, but they went a step further and said, well, once we ban energy, what's going to happen? And they were like, oh, Ramenop Red is going to be just as dominant as it was before energy, you know, rose to power. So let's nerf that. Now it is the Wild West for Standard.
Yeah, it really is. With these kind of bannings, it makes for a good, healthy environment for Standard. And a lot of people can play pretty much anything they want. The only thing is nobody wants to buy into anything because they don't know if it's going to be good. So, right. Like, Kometa being at this $22 price tag.
He's $22?
Gonna... Yeah.
Jeez. Sell.
It's a high price, and I don't think it's going to be that great.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I think, I mean, maybe that Mardu deck I talked about last week has some legs now. Or
Definitely. Maybe
we'll see, you know,
maybe a dinosaur deck.
That dinosaur deck would be awesome. I
saw a mono red deck that mid-range into Tali and Sunbird's Invocation.
Oh my gosh. What?
Could you imagine all the free spells?
Zatalpa and no, not Zatalpa. Itali. I'm sorry. Itali and Sunberg's Invocation seems dang strong. you know what? You should just shove a Swarm Intelligence in there too, because that's what you do, right, Greg?
I mean, maybe.
Oh man. Okay. All right. So bannings happened. Standard is wide open. And there's a lot of people voicing their opinions now that they're upset that the new Pro Tour or the next Pro Tour is modern, because this could be one of the most diverse Pro Tours we've ever seen with Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan. I mean, granted, in the next, couple weeks before the tournament, if we see one deck somehow magically rise to prominence and make up 60%+ of the field at the Pro Tour, then oops. That's just kind of what Magic pros do. They find the best deck, they play them, and they want to win. I mean, can you blame them?
No.
It's just kind of how it works. But anyway, so moving on from the bannings, Greg, you mentioned that there's been some changes involved in play at the competitive professional level.
Yes. Yeah, so Wizards has changed how we take care of emblems and counters that are on a player. You can no longer use dice to represent these counters.
Nope.
So if you're going to have energy, if you're going to have emblems, poison counters, the city's blessing, they're not things that you have to announce. You just have to keep track of them appropriately.
Right.
So more people are going to be using more notepads to keep track of different information. Now, this information is not hidden, but it is treated like your graveyard.
Right.
Yeah. So this is an interesting change. I think one of the coolest things I saw is, why the heck are we still having spin downs in our pre-releases and bundles? Give us pads, notepads.
Ooh, that's a great point. Absolutely. Because
it works a lot better and longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you get like a Rivals of Ixalan life pad to play with, you know, that would be pretty cool.
So
if you are playing in Standard or Sealed or whatever, and you're playing with Rivals of Ixalan and you're playing with City's Blessing, you do not have to announce when you achieve the City's Blessing, hence the notepads. You probably want to mark it down when you get it. But if you ask your opponent, do you have the city's blessing, they have to tell you either yes or no.
Yeah, it's not hidden information. It's just something that does not have to be announced.
Right. Correct. So if you play, you know, if you slowly but surely accumulate 10 permanents and, you know, your opponent is sitting there with their board and then you cast Vona's Hunger, and they say, you know, oh, well, I have to sacrifice a creature. And then you say, well, no, you actually have to sacrifice half your creatures because I have the city's blessing. And he's like, well, you didn't tell me. You'd be like, well, I didn't have to tell you. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's why, like you're saying, notepads are very important, because you can take notes, you can keep track of game states, and nobody wants to encounter a situation where, let's say that Greg, you and I are playing, and I get the city's blessing on turn 5, you know.
Blech.
But you somehow kill my creatures and you whittle me down to, and I'm sorry, turn 5, I get the city's blessing with my 10 permanents per a card. I don't know what, but I have it, right? And then we move fast forward to turn 10. My board is much less. However, I again cast Vona's Hunger. And you look and you say, oh, well, you only have 5 permanents out. You know, I sacrifice a creature. And then I say, well, no, I have the city's blessing. Then it's, well, you never told me. And then I'm like, well, on turn 5, I had it, but I didn't say anything. And
yes.
So it's going to be complicated. So if you want to be efficient with how you're playing, then make sure you take effective notes. So when the judge comes, you can back it up and say, well, on this turn, that way, you know,
but
you and your opponent.
This is only required at professional and competitive. So any place where you go that requires deck lists, you have to use this system.
Yes.
If you're going to be on camera, if you have stamped deck lists, stamped pools, those are professional level. This will have to happen. If you're playing at F&M, who the heck cares?
Right. Just, you know, it's a game.
They're not blanketing this. You can announce it. You don't have to. It's your choice.
Right, right.
You can represent it with the token they give you. You cannot.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever you'd like.
Right. So just to surmise the announcement, things like energy, poison counters have to be represented. You cannot use a dice, essentially, because you can bump the table. It can be moved, whatever. You need a more solid way to track that.
Correct.
At the competitive professional level.
Right. So. They want to have a better system. That's what it really came boiled down to.
Yeah.
So moving from that.
Yes.
What else did we get?
We got an article. A lot of us, including myself, who is a Mac user, were very excited about the release of MTG Arena. And there's been a lot of questions revolving around the economy and the financial situation involved with MTG Arena. Well, we got a little piece.
We got a semi-answer.
Yes, we did. We got a little nugget here. So I'm going to run through some bullet points of this article, and we can talk about them as we go. So there are two forms of currency that you can use in the game of MTG Arena. There is gold, and there is gems. Now, gold is earned by in-game actions, like winning games, completing quests, and events. Gems can only be purchased for real money in the in-game store. So things like packs can be bought with both gold and gems. So if you really want to shell out and open those packs, you can, or you can grind it out long term by playing in the events, playing in the dailies, playing in other things, and earning yourself gold to open those packs.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of ways for you to open those packs, if I remember correctly. And then whenever you get like a 4 of a card, it allows you to sort of cash them in, right?
Exactly, which we will touch on in this next section, which is essentially the types of ways that you can get cards. And there looks like there's 5 different ways that you can get cards. There are booster packs, which you can buy, which are 8 card packs containing 5 commons, 2 uncommons, and 1 rare or mythic rare. There are draft packs, which contain 14 cards, which will be used when you participate in a draft event. And these are very similar to what you're used to if you've played MTGO or if you've played in person. Then there are individual cards, which will also be, you can earn them through play. They're testing a system right now where you can earn, I believe it is 1 card in MTG Arena, up to 30 per day. So that could be exciting, however they decide to do that. Then there's some new things. There's the wild cards, and these wild cards will populate in place of a booster that you open, not the draft ones, but boosters that you, the 8 card ones that you buy and open. And wild cards are essentially any one of the cards in the pack. You can choose a card to take and have in your collection based on the rarity the wild card was achieved in. So if it's a wild uncommon, you can pick any uncommon that now becomes part of your collection. If it's a rare or a mythic, you can pick any one of those to get, which is kind of exciting. I mean, this is definitely brand new.
What was it? I saw a picture of somebody representing this online where it just had 5 wild cards from Uno on it.
Essentially,
it was kind of what it was. It was like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah, exactly. It adds a new element to opening booster packs. You know,
yes. Like
I know in MTGO, a lot of people would earn their booster packs and they would save them and they would use them to enter events or sell them or get, you know, whatever for them. But this definitely offers a little more incentive to actually opening these cards.
Mm-hmm.
Then the last way to get cards, again, brand new, it's called the Vault. Now, you mentioned when you get 5 cards, they, you know, because a lot of people will look to models like Hearthstone where they use dust. You know, if you want to get rid of cards, you turn them into dust and then you can craft cards with them. Well, the Vault is a way where you can, if as soon as you get a card over your 5th card, because, you know, playsets, 4. A 5th card in a digital environment is rendered pretty much useless. So it immediately, automatically converts that towards progress towards opening the vault. So the vault, when opened, will award any number of wild cards immediately just upon opening it. So it's a great way for players to, again, through grinding, through playing a lot more, will get cards. They will get access to the vault in which they will open and hopefully get cards that they want or, you know, are looking for. So it's very, very interesting to see, you know, how this shakes out and how this is going to affect, you know, people and their ability to collect both, you know, playable cards and decks, mm-hmm. but also, you know, how much do they want to spend on...
Well, there's the other question of, because of how this is being set up, it feels extremely casual. So, mm-hmm. are they going to be making this a casual play? And even though they're going to make this open to people to cast... If it stays random like this, how are they truly going to have a competitive level play if they don't have trading or the ability to buy cards?
You know what they're going to have? Is they're going to have opportunities for you to spend money, to gamble, and try to get those cards that you're looking for. Yes, I said gamble, because let's not beat around the bush. Every time you open a booster pack, it's like opening a lottery ticket. You know,
I mean, you know,
don't lie.
You know. Japan actually has Magic set up as a gambling game.
Sure. I mean, why not? You know, it, loopholes, you can sidestep whatever you want to say that Magic isn't gambling, but every time you open that pack, it's the same as baseball cards have been for decades. You know, it's you open a random
Correct.
Pack of cards expecting to get what you want. And if you do, you're on cloud 9. If not, you want to buy more. You know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Go ahead.
I think there needs to be a third-party system if they're not going to allow for trading. There has to be a way to be able to allow people to get the cards they want for competitive play.
See, you say there has to be. Hasbro and Wizards will probably just say, you need to spend more money. If you want to get this, you need to spend more. They could care less about the secondary market, right? Am I right?
Technically, no.
Whether
because
it's in paper
this game
or digital.
Is purely focusing on the secondary market. And if they want it to be an entrance into an e-sport, not having the ability to have people get the decks without spending gross amounts of money, it's going to fail. Nobody's going to play it.
That's the thing. Without spending gross amounts of money, you have your paper system, which is the current Pro Tour format. You know, everything is, you know, you stream paper with all this other stuff.
It is not the only Pro Tour
format. No, for the Pro Tour.
The Pro Tour has played online before.
Okay.
On Modo.
Okay, well, Modo. Then Modo's here to stay, right? Right? I don't know about that. You know, we'll have to take a good solid look on how Wizards is streaming and portraying their digital selves as they move forward. So, I don't know. I think that MTG Arena is the future. Wizards is kind of putting a lot of money into this basket, and it needs to work. So, You know, and it's based on the players and what they'll
yeah,
do.
Yeah, but so, it still comes down to the problem of if they want to make this their entrance into esports, they cannot expect every player to spend $1,000 every 4 months. Because that's just not an equitable plan. I mean, even when you look at other esports games, there is nowhere close to that amount of money spent.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if they don't have a secondary way of getting cards, it's going to fail. I'm not saying it's a bad system. I'm just saying that if they're going to solely depend on that, it's going to fail.
Okay. Well, the good news is, as a digital product, it is subject to updates. So
definitely,
if they try something and it doesn't work, they can always take a hard left and try something else. So it is exciting to see that you can grind this game without shoveling tons of money into it and get some pretty good cards and build decks.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not, or however long it takes them to expand beyond just standard, that's to be seen. And for that length of time, MTGO will still be strong because people will want to play everything from Vintage to Legacy to Modern to Commander, you know, to Momir Vig or Momir Basic, whatever that is.
Yeah, it's Momir Basic because you play with basic lands.
There you go. Yeah. So they will still have that outlet, you know, as long
or
as Joyra. MTGO is relevant. Right, right.
Yeah, so, but I don't know. If Arena literally does take over, Moto's going to go.
It is. It is. It really is. And I think it's great that if you do invest, and they're offering, you know, you can pay money in this MTG Arena beta to get gems. But they said that they will not refund, but they will credit you an equal amount of what you've spent after they wipe your account once the official release of MTG Arena happens. So
right.
You can then throw all that money into whatever you want. Probably, I mean, obviously it's going to be gems, but how you spend those gems will be on you. And maybe you learn something in the beta on how you spend the gems and how it's effective. Oh,
sure.
Oh. One other thing that I forgot to mention about the wild cards. You can save wild cards from set to set to set. So if you want to, you know, save up 10, 20, 30, however many wild cards you want, and you're waiting for Dominaria, you can cash those wild cards in when Dominaria comes out and expect to get, you know, wild cards from that set. You don't have to spend them immediately when you get them. And I think that's kind of cool. You know, like, I think that'll offer players much more incentive to want to search for these wild cards because, yeah, they seem pretty cool. They seem really, really awesome. So, all right. Well, let's close the book on MTG Arena for this week. I think that's very exciting news. I can't wait to see what happens with this.
So we got to cast Living Death, and we have now won the game. We will move on.
Sure, and you cast it with As Foretold, right?
Exactly.
We were in As Foretold. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Yeah. All right.
What's the next card you'd want to cast with As Foretold, though?
You mean after Living End?
I don't know. Ancestral Vision?
Yeah. Yeah, you could, I guess. But, I mean, you can't do it in the same turn, and it's a sorcery, so you can't cast it on your opponent's turn. So,
man.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe it's Treasure Cruise.
Maybe it's Treasure Cruise. Oh, God. That's going to be a lot of turns, though, man. A lot of turns or a lot
whatever.
Of proliferation. It's a proliferation sensation.
It is.
Anyway. All right. So we're gonna move on here. And we're going to head over to our brew segment because considering we are in the wild, wild west, we wanted to bring another idea of a deck to your doorstep and see if you guys like it or not because – you know, that's what we do. You know, lore's brews and news here at the Wind Condition. So let's head on over to our main phase.
I would like to cast Thunderherd Migration for 2.
Ooh, what the heck does that do? That's Rivals of Ixalan, right? What does that do?
It searches for a land, basic land, puts it on the battlefield tapped. But it costs 3 if you don't have a dinosaur in play or reveal it from your hand.
That's right. I remember that now. Okay. Yeah. New rampant growth. That's awesome.
Yes. It seems pretty decent. I mean, could you imagine dropping a Ripjaw Raptor turn three?
I can definitely imagine that. That sounds pretty saucy, if you ask me. So, also, Greg, I mentioned to you that we need to actually brew some standard decks here to play on stream, as well as make some YouTube videos. So, I know I don't have it ready yet, but soon we should make some of these decks and actually play so that we can see what works and what doesn't and help educate our listeners on the goings-on of our dirtily concepts here. So anyway, what I have brewed up today, and I've been very curious about this for a while, not quite as long as the Mardu deck, but I love the God Cycle from Hour of Devastation. Obviously, the Scarab God has taken the world by storm, but in a close second, I absolutely love the Locust God. And we saw the Locust God come out, I believe it was in, what, the World Championships? There was a Jeskai Approach of the Second Sun deck that had it in its sideboard.
Yeah.
And it was pretty sweet to see it actually hit the table.
Yeah, it did a lot of things, too. Yeah, it's not completely useless.
I think every time it actually came out, oh my gosh, I can't remember his name, so I won't try. Every time he came out, he won the game. And it's a very, very strong card. So if you don't know, the Locust God is a... it costs a red and a blue for a...
Wait,
red
it's
and
a
blue
drop?
No. Red and a blue and four generic.
Okay.
Yeah, right. It's a 4/4 flyer, indestructible. No, not indestructible. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking here.
Indisturbable.
Indisturbable, right? Okay, so it's a 4/4 flyer, and every time you draw a card, you put out a 1/1 blue and red locust creature token with flying and haste.
Yeah.
And every
then
time
it has a draw effect on it too.
It does.
Yeah. It's not very great. It's like pay four, draw a card, discard a card.
Yeah.
And then it has the other clause. If it was put into your graveyard at the end of turn, put it back into your hand. Because
right.
Our devastation gods do that.
Exactly. So it's a very, very, very strong card. And I really wanted to brew an Izzet control deck. I know Grixis control has kind of been a thing, but... there are a couple other cards that I really, really like and kind of want to build a deck that will take advantage of the Locust God as well as Red's ability to burn people's faces, Blue's ability to counter spells and draw cards. You know, keep it kind of simple, but at the same time, try to make a shell to start with that can be somewhat competitive. So here we go. I'm going to go ahead and just start with the creatures. Definitely want to run a Baral. I'm starting with three. He's one and a blue for a 1/3 legendary as a human advisor.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. But yeah, he says your instants and sorceries cost one less, and every time you would counter a spell, you loot. You draw a card and you discard a card. So right off the bat, he's going to make all your spells cheaper.
Wait, I thought it was any time... You said counter a spell, right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay. So he seems pretty good. I'm going to run two of the Locust Gods, because with all the card draw, you're probably going to run into one of these guys sooner or later, and you only really need one. We're going to run...
Because legendary, right?
And legendary as well, absolutely. We're going to run four Champion of Wits, because... Mid-range, card draw, eternalization later, drawing more cards, fueling that Locust God, as well as just filtering through your deck, just ripping through it. And then we're going to run, three Torrential Gear Hulk, because in a control deck with instants, you kind of want Torrential Gear Hulk. He seems pretty good. And so that's actually going to do it for our creatures. Then we're going to go into our card draw section. We're going to be running four Hieroglyphic Illumination, because who needs energy, you know? And if you want to cycle it for one and get that card draw to make that Locust token in a pinch, you can do it, you know? Or if it's turn one or two and you need to cycle it, you can do that as well. We're going to go all in with Pull From Tomorrow, two of those. So, you know, later on in the game, you want to draw a bunch of cards. You can, you know, only two. So you don't want it in your opening hand necessarily. We're going to run four Opt because Opt just seems pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to continue on with some cyclers that are going to allow us to some incidental card draw if we don't need to play the spell. We're going to start with two Sweltering Suns. I mean, you all know that I am a big proponent of Sweltering Suns. And if you don't need it, you can cycle it.
True.
So with all this card draw, discard, and cycling, I figure, why not run three Drakehaven? You know, make yourself some 2/2 flyers for defense. You know, keep yourself relevant in terms of offense and defense. And, you know, it seems pretty strong with all these cards going into your graveyard.
I mean, it doesn't seem bad, that's for sure.
Yeah, right? I mean, we haven't seen too much. I mean, there's a cycling deck, you know, blue-white cycling deck that we saw in the standard where, what's that format called? Unified standard. There you go. So that could be a good thing. And we're going to run two disallows because you're blue. You're countering spells. You've got a Torrential Gear Hulk. You can counter abilities. It seems pretty good. With all the card draw, you might not want to counter everything, but you can counter that, you know, crucial spell that you need. And then we're going to run a couple damage spells because we actually do have to control the board. We can't just draw cards and hope to live. We're going to run four Lightning Strikes because it gives you the ability to go for the face as well as creatures. And with Baral, that's essentially a Lightning Bolt. You know, it seems pretty good. And then we're going to run one of my pet cards, Flame Lash, which is available from only the Chandra Planeswalker deck, which is 3 and a red instant, deal 4 damage to target creature or player. And I tell you what, I have cast a couple of these, followed up with a Torrential Gear Hulk, and if you go straight to the face, that's 8 damage to the face, plus you get your, 5-6 creature on the board?
True.
Like, that's pretty strong. So, you got your Lightning Strikes, your Flame Lash, and then also to round it out, 2 Hour of Devastation. I think that this card is grossly underplayed, especially in a format where you're going to be seeing a lot of vampires, you're going to be seeing a lot of merfolk, you're probably going to be seeing a lot of energy persist, so it's a great way to deal with Hazoret.
Yeah.
It's a great way to deal with boards that go wide and get a little bit bigger. Obviously, if they get to be 6/6s or 7/7s with Kumena or, you know, what have you, you're going to lose the game anyway. But it's a great way to kind of board wipe while not being in white. So that's pretty much it. That's the main deck, and you know, you can construct your mana base as needed, but you know, just an idea, throwing it out there. Is it control? And I'm gonna try to build it one of these days and see how it does. So
I mean, it sounds good.
Yeah.
Would you possibly run Soulscarred Mage?
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that, because that was a great card that I was debating
and,
on.
I had another card in thought, just to give you that extra distance. You seem like you have a lot of spells that you might be casting in one turn. Why wouldn't you run maybe like Vance's Blasting Station?
You could do that too. Absolutely, yeah. And again, this shell is out there to get people thinking about cards that could potentially be run with this to make it even more effective. And I love that you said Soulscar Mage. I'm going to revisit this for 1 second, because the fact of his interaction with Sweltering Suns is so good, because if you can cast, like you said, multiple spells in a turn, Soulscar Mage is a 1/2 prowess for 1 red mana. So if you cast Sweltering Suns, it immediately makes your Soulscar Mage a 2/3, and if you're able to top that with a Lightning Strike, then he becomes a 3/4 and he dodges the Sweltering Suns. So, you know, and then you can swing in if you clear the board with a power 3 creature. Soulscar Mage is definitely an amazing card. Loved him since the beginning. And, thank you, Greg, for mentioning that. So you can kind of take this any way you want. You can take it more in a counter, you know, respect, throwing in more negates or essence scatters. Or you could take it in more of a burn fashion because you've got magma sprays. You've got other, you know, damaging spells. but I love the Locust God. You know, built an EDH deck around him, but I think he's definitely good enough for standard play. So yeah, that's my little Izzet control build. Let us know what you think. You know, any suggestions, comments, concerns that I should stop brewing these decks? Please let us know. So that kind of brings us up to the end of our episode.
Does that bring you to your end phase?
That brings us to, yes, the end phase.
All right, since we're in the end phase, let's clean up our act and tell everybody where they can find us.
Absolutely. Well, you know where you can find me is you can find me at flipsidegaming.com, ordering lots of Magic products, whether it's singles or sealed product. And I'm definitely using that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save 10% off the purchase and contribute to future show giveaways, of which we are going to have one on our 50th episode. Thank you, everybody who's participated in them so far. Can't wait to see how we craft this one, but it's going to be interesting. But otherwise,
crafting, of course, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Otherwise, you can find me personally on Twitter at MTG_Sean.
And you can find me on NoobSlasher2003 on Twitter.
And the show is at The Win Condition. You can reach out to us an email at thewincondition@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Instagram at TheWinConditionMTG. We will put a link in our show notes to our YouTube page. You can kind of search for The Win Condition out there if you want. I know there's another channel called The Win Condition. I think they're a foreign
Russian
language or something like that. Russian, there you go. But our logo, TWC, is the headliner thumbnail for our page. Come check
Correct.
Us out. Let us know what you think. And, yeah, thanks for listening. All that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Not a problem. Always a pleasure.
And we will talk to y'all next week.
All right.